Hey guys, I'm Tawny, founder of Sobriety Party and Readings on Recovery.
And I'm Lisa, author of Girl Walks Out of a Bar. And welcome to our podcast,
Recovery Rocks. We're going to talk to you about everything from recovery to rock and roll to living in New York City.
We're going to talk about how we got sober, why we got sober, and how we stay sober. Hey everybody.
What's up?
I'm Lisa.
I'm Tawny.
And welcome to today's episode. Again, a great topic that was suggested to us by a listener.
I'll lean right back into you.
The topic is dealing with coexisting mental health issues as a person in recovery. I personally deal with depression and anxiety that does not disappear because I'm sober.
Same.
And... Yeah, it's a major issue. It's hugely common. I do a lot of speaking with lawyers and the existence, not just in the legal profession, but generally also of people in recovery or people with a substance use disorder, the overlap of having an underlying mental health diagnosis is like off the charts. I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, I've read numbers as high as 70-80%. It does make sense when we put it into context. So we're going to talk about that today. I'm going to just read briefly from Girl Walks Out of a Bar.
The book she wrote.
The book I wrote. about sort of learning about that when I was in the detox in 2004. Which began my sober journey. So I'm now having a conversation with the psychiatrist in the detox, and I'm asking him this question. Are you saying that I can never drink like a normal person because I'm an alcoholic? Wait, are you saying I'm not supposed to ever drink again? Something kicked in my stomach. He says, the only effective treatment we've seen is medication to address the brain chemistry issue, which he related to addiction, combined with abstinence from substances supported by a 12-step program. This was, again, 14 years ago. My preliminary evaluation is that what I would suggest for you. His finality seemed preposterous. Why couldn't I get better and then work hard at drinking socially, stopping after one or two? Oh, who was I trying to kid? Stopping after two? That sounded preposterous. But you're saying never drink again? That's for you to decide for yourself. But from what I've seen, you're a smart woman with a very serious problem. If you don't address it and you keep going, you'll find yourself back here if you're lucky. People who can drink socially don't generally come in here requiring a medicated detox. Tears began rolling down my face. I had pulled my knees to my chest and was rocking back and forth. The doctor continued, my guess is that all along you've been drinking not to be social, but to self-medicate your depression and anxiety. And now it's gone beyond your control. I think you need to embark on a long-term program of recovery. And he had based that diagnosis of major depressive disorder on the sort of 4 days of interviews, you know, meetings I'd had with him while I was in the detox, where he asked me all kinds of questions about how I drank, why I drank, when I drank, you know, what happened when I drank, and other topics about sort of my emotional well-being. And so that was when I first got, you know, I knew I had been depressed, but that was when I realized I had something called depression and that it was a brain chemistry issue, was a mental health disorder, and that it was great to have an explanation for all the drinking in a way, the need, which was to shut my mind, to quiet my mind. And from then I started treating it with medication, and I still do today and I don't ever plan to stop.
I love how he said you're a smart woman with a serious problem.
Yeah.
That really struck me, because there's been times when I felt like I was stupid.
Because this is what I do.
Yeah, like I must be stupid because I'm drinking like this, and because I'm treating my body this way. I must be an idiot.
No smart person would do this to themselves.
No, and it's, I think that's so refreshing, and that must have, was that a nice thing to hear?
Oh my God, it was a relief.
When you
said
that, that sounds so nice.
Yes.
It's like, it's not you, like you have right. a serious problem.
It's the chemistry in your brain.
Wow.
It's literally like how you're wired.
That's great. That's more, that needs to be like, I don't know, put that on a shirt or something. I'm a smart woman with a serious,
problem. Yeah. Maybe several serious problems.
Yeah, with several. Which is the topic of discussion today was how we had and still have several issues.
Your
issues don't go away because you're sober.
No.
I still have depression. I still have anxiety. And at times they're worse because I'm sober.
Because
I feel them. But I'm able to, I now have the tools to know how to take care of it.
To work through them instead of just to shut them down.
Yeah, I feel my depression now where I drank through it before. I feel my anxiety now and it sucks. It really sucks. But I know that at least I'm present and I'm dealing with this feeling and I'm acknowledging it instead of getting wasted and pretending that it doesn't exist.
Right.
And that's not any way to go about living.
No. And let me ask, like, when you have, like, what does depression look like for you in recovery? Because I think, you know, before we got sober, whatever it looked like was a little bit stilted because we were self-medicating and, you know, alcohol for me being depressed and then drinking only made matters worse because alcohol is a depressant. And then there's all the physical hangover, but also the regret and the shame and all that went with it. But like now that you are sober and, you know, living a different way, like what happens? What does it feel like when your brain chemistry issues?
Yeah. So my therapist says that I have something called agitated depression.
And what is that?
And that is, it's also called high functioning anxiety. It's where
interesting because I see the tie-in.
Yeah. It's I talk about being a work addict, full-blown work addict, addicted to productivity, addicted to producing content. And that's exactly what agitated depression is. I have to stay as busy as possible so I don't avoid my depression. So for me, I work, in the same way that I drank.
So, but how, when you said agitated depression, I thought it was going to be something like when you get depressed and sort of rageful or angry.
That too. And then it's once I finally sit still enough to feel my depression, I get angry.
You get angry.
There was a good chunk of sobriety where I was way more in touch with my anger than any other emotion.
Wow.
And a lot of that comes from my depression. I wrote an article about it.
Do you want to read some?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
I just find it fascinating because it's very different. And we can talk
it
about
it. It is different.
Than how my depression manifests itself.
So I'm going to read a couple paragraphs from an article called Living with Anxiety Depression on sobrietyparty.com. When I stay busy, I don't allow myself to feel what my body and mind need to feel. Feelings like grief, depression, anxiety, stress, or sadness are completely valid. They deserve just as much respect as love, positivity, and happiness. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to stay in bed, and it's okay to cry. I've had to learn this the hard way. For most of my life, I've stayed busy. I was either busy getting wasted, busy sleeping around, busy dropping out of school, busy working several jobs at a time, busy building a business, busy jumping from relationship to relationship. And this behavior didn't stop when I got sober. I continued to numb myself with working towards a promotion I thought I wanted, or training for a half marathon, or overcommitting to writing assignments, or coaching other people in their sobriety, which was something that I was not qualified to do, and masochistically reading self-help books. That's a whole other conversation.
Masochistically reading.
Seriously. My therapist calls this agitated depression and high functioning anxiety, staying too busy to feel my feelings. If you watch Parks and Rec, Rob Lowe's character, Chris Traeger, is a classic example of someone like me. Shout out to the writers of Parks and Rec for helping me process my diagnosis with some comic relief. Rob Lowe's character portrays an overzealous, delusional character that that was crumbling on the inside, and it helped me realize that I wasn't alone, and I got to laugh through it. Agitated depression is hard to come out of because it's hard to slow down enough to see it. When I was in the thick of it, I was getting shit done, but my plate was overflowing and I couldn't catch my breath. People would tell me, I don't know how you do it. You're so focused. You're so driven. I wish I could be like you. But I wasn't healthy. I was drowning. I bit my nails. I picked my face until it bled. All day, I would be go, go, go until I got home and I had emotional meltdowns. My body and mind were throbbing from constant movement. I picked fights with people I cared about because I was too unstable to process my emotions and communicate them effectively. I lost my temper at any given moment, hence the term agitated depression.
Wow. That is so fascinating to me because, like, my depression, when I know, because I have what I call depressive relapses, which is meaning that even though I take my medication and I do the various things that I'm supposed to do to avoid, you know, falling into a depression, it happens. It's a brain chemistry thing. It happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens. And what I feel when it's coming on is the first symptom is exhaustion. All of a sudden, I am so tired. And I just, it's almost like this little film forms around my eyeballs.
Oh, wow.
It's like, I don't want to be anywhere except in bed. And everything just looks kind of dirty. Mm-hmm. And nothing is okay. And I will just start, literally, it's not even like I watch a TV commercial and I start crying. It's like the tears just are coming and I don't know where they're coming from. And I just feel this like inextricable sadness. And I end up like in the worst of it when it gets to like its worst point. Excuse me. I end up like I'll wake up in the morning and I'll be like, okay, all right, you can do this. Just put one foot on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I'll put one foot on the floor. And I'll be like, all right, let's put another foot on the floor. And, like, I literally have to get myself to go brush my teeth. If it happens, I'll call in sick if I can't go to work. And that is, like, you know, what it looks like for me. It is exhaustion. It is just grief. Like not grief. It is just a sadness. Mm. Styron called it darkness visible. And that's what it is. It's just dark. And I have no energy. Like, I could get nothing done when I'm deep in that. And I know, like, what I used to do, I've talked about this a ton with my therapist, is fight it, right? And be like, come on, it's not that bad. You know, tough it out. Life on life's terms. You know, you got a lot to be grateful for. Write a gratitude list. And I can do all those things. But I also have to just go, okay, I'm in the throes of one of those things that my brain does. Yeah. I've been here before. I know what it's like. I'm going to, you know, be kind to myself. I'm going to hang with my two friends, Ben and Jerry. I'm going to do
They're
love them. They're the best. They live in Vermont.
Yeah. It's nice of them to come all the way down here.
Yes. They come hang whenever. Go, okay, I got to accept this and it's going to pass. You know, it always has in the past. And if it's not passing, I'm calling my doctor and I'm figuring out if I need some meds adjustment, what I'm going through, but I'm not, you know, trying to think I can conquer this thing and I'm not trying to think it's going to kill me either. I just have to figure out the place to hang until it passes. And it can take anywhere between 4 days, 5 days too, like the longest, if it's like more than a week, 10 days, then I have to like really start looking at whether my meds need adjustment or something else is going on. And I've had to adjust my meds at different points. So.
And you've gotten better at identifying these triggers and seeing it coming on.
I can see it when I feel it, when I get that. Yeah, I'm better at identifying. Yeah, I could never separate it before from my hangover or from my self-recrimination or my self-hatred or whatever I was going through. It was all part and parcel. And then I kept drinking to make that go away.
Which only helps.
Yeah, I know. It's for the choice, not for winners there.
Not for winners.
No, no. And what about the anxiety? How do you, like, is that, because it's so interesting how that anxiety, like high functioning anxiety and and that agitated depression both have the same kind of thing going on.
Yeah, it's...
Or is there a different manifestation for you on anxiety?
It's very similar. I do have depressive episodes, but those are few and far between. I had one this year. Anxiety is something that I deal with not on a daily basis, but several times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned to manage those symptoms with yoga mm-hmm. and meditation, drastically reducing the amount that's on my plate.
Are you able to do that?
As hard as that is for me, I'm getting better at it. I'm finally learning to. I'm learning that like I'm about to be 33 and 3 years sober, and I'm learning that it's okay if I don't do everything.
Right.
It's okay. Right. It's okay if I don't.
Oh my gosh.
It's yeah. okay if I don't save the world.
Yes.
It's fine.
Yes.
I'm still gonna want to.
Yes, you can do that tomorrow, though.
But I can do that tomorrow. That's good. But it's like I'm finding comfort in, like, I'm in this reprioritization phase of, like, there's so much stuff going on, and, like, I'm prioritizing X, Y, and Z, but I'm not writing.
Yeah.
Or I'm making time to do this, but I'm not doing that. So it's, I actually sat down and made a list the other day of what my priorities are,
mm-hmm.
what my priorities are, and what I'm spending my time doing.
Yeah.
And some of them were the same, but there's definitely some that there's some things I'm doing that I'm really just not that passionate about anymore, that I'm yeah. just doing because I feel like I should, because it's my responsibility to save the world.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's my responsibility to be happy and healthy.
Yes.
And be a good person.
Good to other humans, yeah.
That's my responsibility. And I'm finally in the headspace of where I'm actually pretty okay with yeah. that. It's tough. Don't get me wrong. It's tough because opportunities come my way and I want to just jump on them and say yes.
Yeah.
But I'm now in a place where I'm thinking about it and I'm like, you know, I really need to have that night of solitude and just
yes.
relax.
Huge,
you know,
huge.
I would love to go to this event, but I just, it's not going to be good for me in the long
yeah.
run.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is no is a complete sentence.
It really is.
You don't owe anybody an explanation, especially
really.
When you, and
but
we're going
to
talk
like
about
I owe
self-care.
It to myself.
Yes.
Like, I'll tell people no, but I need to justify it to myself.
And you don't. You don't.
I know
yeah.
I know I don't
I know,
need
but
to.
It's
but that's part that's
done.
My addiction
yeah.
and that's the agitated depression of if I need to stay busy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not super busy, then I have to actually sit with this shit. And it's not very fun. So it's like finding maybe smaller ways to stay busy. Maybe it's going to a movie with a friend, or
yeah.
maybe it's not working on 100 different projects.
Putting
maybe
additional
it's,
pressure on yourself to achieve something.
Exactly.
Else. Maybe
they
it's
don't,
just
it doesn't
play.
Have to be achievement. It doesn't
right.
have to be achievements. It could be, you know, making a to-do list of simple things around the house, and that's what I've done for the
right.
day.
Right.
And you know, at being sober.
Yeah.
You know, like that's.
To always give
we,
credit for
we
that.
Have to always
we
give,
forget. Yeah.
We talk about all of these really great things, but it's like being sober and like not getting wasted today.
Oh.
That's like if that's the only
thing
I cross off on my to-do list,
oh, yeah,
then
that's
it's a good
it.
Day.
That's the only thing we have to do perfect every day. Is
but
not
I
pick
have
up a
to
drink.
Remind myself
yes.
of that.
Yes. That other it's a perfect day. If you don't drink, it's a perfect day. Yeah.
Perfect Day is a great Lou Reed song, by the way.
Oh yeah, you're right. Nice. What about, so, I mean, for me, like, I feel like, we need to talk more about the ways that people can, you know, we deal with our drinking or our substance abuse, and then, but there can be shame around these and, you know, sort of around
oh, yeah.
these issues of continuing to deal with. And a mental health challenge. Because I remember in the beginning, you know, I was like, listen, if you want me to take these meds and they're actually going to make me not feel like I have to drink all the time. And they weren't sort of anti-alcohol. The idea being that if my brain chemistry was not parked in depression, I could then maybe feel less compelled to drink because I wouldn't be self-medicating. I wouldn't feel the need
yeah.
to self-medicate. But, you know, I also, so I've never had a problem. I know a lot of people feel like, you know, there's somehow something wrong if they have to take medication or that, you know, and that has to end. And I have to say there've been, you know, I've been in 12-step meetings where people will be critical of someone else's recovery because they take medication or because, you know, there's, and I just want to say my perspective is anybody who hears that, please ignore that because it is not true. I mean, with the, you know, just to get into 12-step for a minute is, you know, it is very clear that in the big book, it says we are not doctors, right? So I leave the treatment to the doctor. And we are also permitted to take whatever medication is prescribed to us by a doctor as prescribed. So if there is nothing in 12-step that says there's something wrong with anti, there were no such medications when all this stuff was written down. And that is not true because at first I did try to, you know, I had, I did an experiment about a year and a half into my recovery where I said, you know, I'm feeling good and I don't know what part is the sobriety and what part is the medication. So I think maybe I can go off the medication. And so I tried, I did a careful taper down with my therapist and then I stopped, I was done and I felt pretty good. And then 3 weeks later, just boom, the lights went out. And I was sad and angry and mad at myself that I couldn't somehow do this. And I was thinking, you know, just tough this out. I'm feeling my feelings. This is, you know, life on life's terms and all stuff. And no, I got to the point where I was on a work trip. I tried to tough it out, which was dumb to begin with. I don't recommend it. Don't do that.
Never tough it out. Like,
don't tough it out.
Don't do that.
No, my motto is why suffer?
Yeah.
So anyway, it ended up at the end of that, I was on a work trip. And I had to meet the partner downstairs. We were in Florida and I couldn't get out of the bed. And I literally rolled onto the floor of the hotel room and got my cell phone. And I called my therapist and thank goodness I got her. And I was like, okay, I'm have 4 more days and then I'm going to drink. I said, I have no idea why we can do this for four more days, but I can do this for 4 more days and I'm going to drink. She was like, experiment is over. You know, you come back. You go get back on the meds, and that's what I did. I came back, and that was it. The experiment was over.
How long were you off?
Well, I had tapered down over 2 or 3 months, and then it was 3 weeks after I took my last tiny dose that happened. And then, but the crash was really bad, and it was within like a week and a half or two weeks. I was like, it was at least 2 weeks later, and I was like, I can't do it. That's when I called her. She was like, this should not be happening. You did a careful taper down. You know, clearly you need to take the medication. And that's it. And there is no shame in that.
Not at all.
Pete Davidson on Saturday Night Live the other week was on. I forget what he was talking. Oh, he was talking about Kanye. And he said, there is no shame in the medicine game. And it's true. It's true.
I mean, medicine exists for a reason.
Yes.
And if you're sick, you take medicine.
Right.
You know, or if you like the holistic route, that works for you, that's fine. I go the herbal route. I take holy basil.
Yeah.
Which is a natural anti-anxiety supplement. I take that in pill form and I also drink a tea, a holy basil tea. I drink kava tea, which is a natural anti-anxiety, and yoga and meditation. And that helps me manage.
Yeah.
And there's times when I do think about getting on an anxiety prescribed medication. But I am so terrified of anything because I had a pill problem in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
And my big issue, it was hydrocodone and Xanax.
Uh-huh.
And I have this fear of going back into that world of anti-anxiety medication.
Well, that could be managed if you needed
it. And I know that it could, and I'm in a totally different headspace now. And I know that.
Yeah.
But it's... I mean, I
but I get it. But I get it. It's like if someone told me I had a, like I did not deal with a pill problem. I take Lexapro 20 milligrams and Wellbutrin, which has been added in over the years, 300 milligrams. So that's a pretty substantial dose of antidepressants. And I know it would have been harder for me to do if I had to like drink them. So it felt like alcohol. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, I think there is that. I think I would have gotten, you know, worked on and gotten past it. Like, you could work on it and get past it. But if you don't need it, you don't need it. There's no reason to take it. For me, I need it or I will be back on that hotel room floor with 4 days to drink.
I hear you. It's tough. Even I'm so afraid of medication now to where, like, I need to have my wisdom teeth removed.
Yeah. Oh, right. We've talked about this.
I've been needing to have my wisdom teeth removed for years, but I won't do it because I'm terrified of the recovery.
Yeah.
Process.
I get it.
And I've talked to people that have had their wisdom teeth pulled. I have to go under and actually have surgery because mm-hmm. one of them is impacted. And I've talked to people and they're like, you're going to be fine. It's like, but they get it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I get it. No,
it's
totally
very triggering
it.
For me.
Yeah.
The thought of going under and having to recover from that without any sort of opioid scares the shit
yeah.
out of me.
Yeah.
And I would rather smoke weed for,
right.
for medication
right.
than get near
that's
an opioid.
If you had it prescribed.
Yeah.
yeah.
Even like, yeah, that's where my head's at. And I think it's great.
Well,
that
there's a reason for that too. You know, it's like we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's scary, but that's not that's my own stuff. Like
yeah.
stigma aside, if you need like
oh my gosh
medication, get
no,
your
why
med-
suffer?
Get medication.
It's not you're there's no like nobility or bravery in suffering through something.
No.
There's no we're not martyrs. It's not you want to be your best position self to be present for yourself and to be present for others and to live
yeah.
your life. So as we wrap up this conversation, is there any particular music you associate with your anxiety or your depression?
You know, it's funny.
Music minute.
Music minute. So just hearing you say that, it reminds me when I first moved to New York, you know, I'm a huge Guns N' Roses fan.
Yes.
Huge. I was listening to Guns N' Roses when I was walking around the city in my headphones. Listening to Guns N' Roses, and I remember it was the first time I listened to Guns N' Roses in my headphones in Manhattan versus
uh-huh.
in Texas, and I was like, this makes me really anxious, like, because it's so fast
yeah,
and loud.
It's in your brain.
And
right
it's like,
there.
It's
yeah.
so, it, Axl's voice is, it's just, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I was so anxious. And I turned it off. I was like, I can't listen to this.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And so I put on Father John Misty. Like,
oh my God.
And I was just like, then I was like, yeah, yeah. I can stroll through Manhattan listening to Father John Misty. But I still go, like, I mean, I listen, that was like a random experience. I still listen to Metallica and, you know, System of a Down when I'm walking around the city now.
Yeah.
But there was just this
right.
this moment when I just couldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I needed
yeah. No, that's funny. It's funny because two songs that I have always loved. One is Garbage, I'm Only Happy When It Rains. Love
great
Shirley
song.
Manson. And the other is Painted Black, Stones.
Mm.
So both like basically depression songs. And it's funny because one of the things that I have developed, it sounds so weird, but like as an actual test, an actual barometer, when I'm trying to check myself, like, am I going into that place or am I just having a bad day? Is I will put on one or both of those songs and sense how they make me feel in my brain. Because I know
oh, wow.
when I'm like, you know, singing along with Shirley Manson and really feeling I'm riding high upon a deep depression, like that's, you know, I know I'm like, there we go. I can gauge, you know, and when I, how emotionally I respond to the words of Painted Black too.
You know what I do when I'm really pissed, when I'm really agitated and in touch with my anger, I listen to Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit.
Oh, love. That's
as
great.
Loud as
that's
possible.
Great.
And I tell people that and they give me shit for it. Like,
why?
Because it's Limp Bizkit.
Come on. We love all kinds of music on
but
this podcast.
I love Limp Bizkit. I was in a Limp Bizkit mosh pit.
Yeah.
I got stomped on and got an elbow to the eye, but whatever.
Yeah.
It was worth it. And I still listen to Limp Bizkit semi-regularly and I'm
yeah.
proud of it.
Yeah. Good for you. Eminem is also really good.
Yeah.
Mental health music.
Eminem's good.
All right. Well, send us your questions. Send us any.
What meds are you on?
What meds are you on? What's your cocktail?
Yeah. What are your issues?
Yeah.
Tell us.
And we will see you next time. Thanks. We would love to hear from you guys. If anybody wants to ask questions, have any discussion, comments, weigh in, You can find me at Girl Walks Out on Twitter, on Instagram, and my website is lisasmithauthor.com.
Yes, and you can find me at Tawny M. Lara, and my website is tawnylara.com. And my blog you can find at sobrietyparty.com.
That's right.
T-E-A.